From the Tillicum House in downtown Astoria, Oregon, this is Coast Community Radio. I'm Anne, and you're listening to Cold Coast, a show dedicated to finding and identifying the missing and unidentified persons of Tillamook, Pacific, and Clatsop counties. Please note that this show does cover subjects that could be disturbing to some. It's time to dive in to Cold Coast. The Tillamook Valley on the northern coast of Oregon is a lush lowland carved and created by a coast range that is nearly impassable by foot. Where nine rivers flow into four bays and a marine layer curls along the community and hangs light above the pastures. It's a vast terrain of coastline, saltwater marshes, freshwater streams, and mountainous areas that call the salmon home to spawn. Highway 53 is a modest two-lane state route that cuts diagonally, connecting southern Clatsop County to northern Tillamook County. It crosses and skirts the Nehalem River that ran a brilliant emerald green during the week of Thanksgiving 2018. Though the sun was warm, it did little to cut the crispness of the chilly fall air as people bustled between home and work, to the grocery store, and then off to join family and friends for holiday celebrations in the small town of Nehalem. But for Carmen Quintana, who lives along this road, the last time she was seen was earlier in the week, picking up things at the local food bank for her Thanksgiving meal. Her daughters had spoken to her over the phone on the 24th, but 2 days later, after not hearing from her, which was highly unusual, they arrived at their mother's home to find her wallet and keys, but their mother nowhere to be found. At the time of her disappearance, Carmen was 59 years old. She's 5 feet, 9 inches tall, and weighs 160 pounds, with gray-brown hair and brown eyes. She has a black cross tattoo on her upper left arm and wears a gold chain necklace with a dolphin pendant and could also be wearing a gold dolphin ring. Originally from Texas, Carmen brought her twin daughters to Oregon and chose to raise them in Nehalem. Living in the area for almost 2 decades, she worked roughly 15 of those years at the Nehalem Bay Winery. And though she has dealt with minor mental illness and alcohol addiction in the past, she's family-oriented and has never been out of touch for any amount of time from friends and family members. The Tillamook County Sheriff's Office, in coordination with Tillamook County Search and Rescue, conducted several searches in the weeks following Carmen's disappearance, and have interviewed, to the best of their knowledge, all the persons she would have come in contact with during that week. Search and rescue teams scoured a wide radius around the residence, using drones, search and rescue dogs, and a boat, to find clues indicating a direction of movement for Carmen, and have now exhausted all leads. And now, over a year after her disappearance, officials are hoping for new information that could help them locate the whereabouts of Maria del Carmen Quintana. Photos of Carmen Quintana are posted on Cold Coast's Facebook and Instagram accounts, and you can find those accounts by searching for @ColdCoastRadio on Instagram or Facebook. If you have any information regarding this missing persons case, please contact Tillamook County Sheriff's Detective Tyler Schultz regarding Maria del Carmen Quintana at 503-815-3330. Of the 1,300 square miles in Tillamook County, over 1,100 are covered with land of diverse and unique features, from the coastal bluffs and cliffs of Cape Kiwanda to rugged mountainous terrain within the Coast Range to the craggy basalt cliffs of Neocony Mountain. With such large and varied areas, it's rather understandable that Tillamook County has at least 12 open missing persons cases dating back to the 1980s. In recent years, Tillamook County Search and Rescue has responded to up to 100 calls in a single year. Roughly 65 volunteers from the surrounding community make up the search and rescue team and are overseen by Tillamook County Sheriff's Deputy Bill Cloud, whose office is a functional space adjacent to a modest meeting and training area in a converted pole barn. On average, the county can see up to 88 inches of rain a year, and it's a classically wet and rainy Tillamook day when I meet up with Deputy Cloud, who is preparing maps for another case. The overpowering sound is of the rain that leaves standing puddles in the gravel yard and rattles through the gutters of the building. It's the sound of being in a waterfall. Well, thank you so much for meeting with me.
Absolutely. How I got into this line of work was I was actually on a fishing trip with some friends, and one of those guys that I was fishing with that day was a deputy here at Tillamook County. In fact, he still is. And he's like, "Hey, we're setting up a reserve program. You and Kelly should, you guys both should apply and become reserves." And I was just out of high school. I really didn't know what I wanted to do, and so I was like, "Hey, yeah, okay, you know, I'll see what it's about." So I put my app in, thinking there's no way I'll even get an interview. A couple weeks later, I get a letter in the mail that says, your interview's, I think it was a Thursday. And it was kind of a series of questions about, you know, what would you do in this situation? And, and I was like, well, without having any law enforcement experience, you know, you just do this or I would do this. Nothing like I was going to engage anybody. And I think they were just looking to make sure that I wasn't just wanting to, you know, start pulling my handgun out and waving it around at people.
Yeah.
And so I just tried to answer them pretty basic and with common sense. And I thought, well, boy, I bombed that because I didn't have I felt like I didn't have the right answers. About 2 weeks later, I get a letter that says, you were accepted. We're having an orientation day at this time. And we you need to be here for this. And so that's kind of how I got started. I started as a reserve and then I worked in the jail and then came out on patrol. And then once I got started out on the patrol division and was out here working full time, that's when I was exposed to search and rescue. I knew that search and rescue was a mandated function of the office, but I didn't really know what all it entailed. So a little history, every sheriff's office in the state of Oregon, there's three functions that they have to do statutorily. You have to maintain a correctional facility, a jail. You have to serve civil papers, and you have to do search and rescue. All the other stuff is extra. I knew that, but I didn't know what it entailed. And so I would show up on these calls and for a missing hunter or whatever the case was, and I would be assigned to a ground search team, and I would go out in the woods and yell their name and look for clues and that sort of thing, and not knowing behind the scenes that there was so much more to it. I did that for almost my whole entire career. I would show up. At times I would be a team leader, but for the most part I was just a ground searcher. And then about 2 years ago, the search and rescue coordinator, maybe it was 3 years ago, that was headed up the program here at Tillamook, was diagnosed with cancer. He had an inoperable brain tumor, and he subsequently passed away. That kind of threw me more into, hey, you need to be more involved in search and rescue, not just kind of on the fringes of it. So I started to, figure out that there's a lot to it. There's actually, some scientific reasoning as to how we go about searching and a lot of technical stuff. And I get you know, 60 some volunteers that I manage, and then come up with training, you know, work on these mission, SAR missions as they come in, you know. And a lot of them are, hey, we went hiking at Cape Lookout State Park and we somehow got off the trail and we just not quite sure how to get back to the trail. Some of them are super that simple. Other ones are, you know, way more complex, like, you know, hey, got a phone call from my mom about, you know, a couple days after Thanksgiving, and we show up and the house is empty. We have no idea where she went.
And because of the diverse terrain of Tillamook County, mm-hmm. what difficulties do you face because of that?
Well, weather is a huge component, especially around here. We get mushroom pickers that go out, you know, rifle deer and elk hunters and that sort of stuff, and it's usually the weather's nasty. So not only is it steep and rugged and challenging in that way, but we also get the, you know, weather aspect of these searches that makes that sometimes much more difficult. You know, a lot of times, you know, we can't get a helicopter. They can't fly because the visibility is almost, you know, zero. Mm-hmm. So, you know, those types of challenges are ones that we face, you know, throughout the year, but mainly this time of year is the weather.
What sort of special training do you have? Do you have your volunteers participate in?
Well, everybody's is certified through the state to become a search and rescue volunteer. And that consists of training that we conduct here. We bring trainers from outside of the area that are experts in, you know, for instance, land nav, GPS, map reading, ground search techniques and that sort of stuff. When it comes to searching the rugged coastline, a lot of just common sense comes into play. Hey, searchers, we know that there's a cliff over here, so we're not going to be going up there. We try to look for avenues other than walking over the edge to look. You know, we use drones. We'll sometimes, if it's possible, we'll get to the bottom and try to look up. The training is everybody has to go through it, but a lot of the challenges that we face, you know, as far as terrain and putting people in there, is just, you know, common sense stuff. I feel like search and rescue is evolving with technology. A lot of the times, if I'm able to just talk to somebody on the phone, and some folks don't even know that their phone has like a compass and or a mapping program, and or if they can shoot somebody a text, I have technical people available that if the lost party is able to text them, mm-hmm. he can open up an app and tell me exactly where that phone is at. And so that makes things so much simpler, you know, when it comes time to start putting people in the field. They're like, hey, I don't know where I'm at, but I have cell phone service, which is great. And, you know, of course, with the cell phone ping, you know, that does give us, you know, if they're able to call 911, I'll have people do that quite regularly. And that will give 911 a set of GPS coordinates. And then I could take that, plug it into a GPS and be like, oh, yeah, they're right over there.
Is there a certain area in the county that you find there are more calls, more clusters of calls?
Usually like hiking trails, Kings Mountain, Cape Kiwanda Beach, where, you know, it gets very heavily populated with people in the summer. And, you know, you find that the call normally is, I haven't seen my kid in 45 minutes. They were last seen down playing by the surf. Again, you know, people forget that the ocean's a machine. It never turns off. And you know, you let your kid go down there and play in the surf 45 minutes and nobody's got an eye on them is beyond me. But yeah, anywhere that there's a high concentration of people going to recreate, Cape Kiwanda, you know, Brown's Camp, you know, Kings Mountain Trail, Cape Lookout Trailhead, stuff like that.
At what point is search and rescue called in?
Well, that varies. A lot of the time what happens is You know, we get a family member that goes out hunting, and those people might let their loved ones know that, hey, I'm going to be back at 5 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, 5 o'clock rolls around and their loved one's not back. And, you know, so the clock starts ticking. Pretty soon this person's, you know, attempted to make a phone call. They're an hour overdue. They might get a hold of somebody that goes out and searches the general area where they thought the hunting was going to occur. And sometimes that'll last till, you know, 9 or 10 o'clock at night. And then once those resources have exhausted what they think is, you know, the area where they thought their loved one was hunting, then they call us. So generally it's, you know, 9, 10, 11 o'clock at night, and, you know, the people have been up driving in the area and yelling and that sort of thing. So, we do get, you know, anywhere from the lost child at Cape Kiwanda all the way up through, you know, the missing hiker up on Kings Mountain and everything in between.
So you are called out to Selma State Forest?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Do you work in coordination with any other search and rescue units out there?
We do. We work with closely with Washington County Explorer Post quite a bit. They come over here and help us. You know, with the searchers that we show up, we're usually good for about the first operational period. You know, people start getting tired, fatigued, and then I start having to pull in resources from Washington County, Lincoln County, and some private search and rescue organizations and throughout the state.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Cold Coast on Coast Community Radio on KTCB in Tillamook and KMUN in Astoria, a show dedicated to finding and identifying the missing and unidentified persons of Tillamook, Pacific, and Clatsop counties. Before the break, we introduced you to the missing persons case of Carmen Quintana. But to better understand a case like Carmen's, we've turned to the Tillamook County Search and Rescue Department for insight into the department and the difficulties that search and rescue crews face.
Switching gears from search and rescue to a specific case, I don't know if you can talk about it, but I was trying to feature Carmen Quintana's case.
Okay.
Can you talk about that? Maybe some questions?
Yeah, we can try.
Okay. So, in the case of Carmen Quintana, her exact last location isn't known.
That's correct.
So how does search and rescue approach a case like that?
Well, we make a determination based on interviews and some investigations to figure out, in this case, she was at the house at some point because she received a phone call. We knew at some point she was at the house, so that's where we have to start from. And that's how we start all searches. If you go park somewhere and you leave your vehicle, and you just disappear and we have no way of knowing which direction you went, we start at the vehicle. And we have your vehicle and that's your last known point. We knew you were there at some point. So we do a 300 meter ring. We take a mapping program that you see right here and I've got a little circle that I put, it's 300 meters, and we look that over, you know, very thoroughly, looking for anything, all the way down to, you know, broken twigs, to boot tracks, to something to give us a direction of travel. Okay, or, you know, maybe we interviewed a family and they said you wanted to go look at your favorite waterfall that was in the area. So we would get your vehicle and say, okay, well, here's the waterfall. So, you know, it's common sense that she probably would have headed this way. And then we would start fanning out. That's how you kind of work it. Sometimes it's a little tough because you end up working kind of backwards. But on this case, you know, it's almost like a sixth sense. Well, she was trying to get there, so it makes sense that she would have walked this way. You know, we wouldn't start putting people this way. Not that we won't ever. But, yeah, she was trying to get to here, and that's what we call, you know, a reflector. She was trying to get to somewhere. So that gets kind of more into the scientific reason. I can't talk to you to find out which direction you went. All I have is an interview that was conducted. Said, yeah, she parked at Munson Creek Trail, and she was going to go look at the waterfall.
Mm-hmm.
So we would start, obviously, by checking the trail to the falls. And from there, if we had, you know, no obvious signs as to where you went, then, you know, we would have to kind of back up and look and continue, you know, talking to people. Was there anybody else there? Mm-hmm. You know, checking all the side trails. Oh, well, it looks like, you know, there's some muddy boot prints up this game trail. Well, then that's the direction we would go.
Okay. But going back to the Lake Quintana's case, there is no direction of travel.
No.
So you searched the area surrounding the residence.
Very much.
How far out did you go? Can I ask you which areas were searched?
We did the neighborhood, the road, the tree line, the wooded area up behind there. We had drones. We had air scent dogs. We had HRD dogs, which are human detection or human remain detecting dogs. I mean, we searched a very broad area. Yeah, we spent a lot of time and put a lot of people throughout the woods there. We haven't stopped searching. We've just scaled it back. We have no other information. We checked the river. Mm-hmm. We've interviewed everybody that we thought that she would have had some sort of contact with. And, you know, nobody's had any, you know, definitive explanation as to where she might have went.
Were there any personal effects still remaining at the house, such as wallet, phone, keys?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Because she went missing in the winter, are there more difficulties? We talked earlier about weather, but does it affect specifically the volunteers or the search dogs? And can you revisit an area in better weather or at a different time and get better results?
Absolutely. And we do that a lot with dogs. If the wind's blowing 40 and the ability for the dog to pick up a scent blowing across the ground at 40 miles an hour is substantially less than if it's a nice, calm, warm, sunny day where the scent would more just kind of float up from the ground and the dog can pick it up much, much easier. We can come back and revisit it, you know, years later. The case is not closed, and in fact we will revisit it, especially if some new information was to come in. It's not ever out of the realm of possibility that we could be back up there next week.
Something to note, Carmen's case is not listed on NAMIS, which is the public database of National Missing and Unidentified Persons. Only law enforcement and family members are able to enter someone on this system at this time. The ability to share information regarding missing and unidentified persons is difficult between cities, counties, states, and nations. It's my hope that she will be added in the future so that the public and other public agencies will have her information and be able to better assist the family in finding her.
Search and Rescue is volunteer-based, mm-hmm. But it seems like you also do fundraising.
We do.
Is that a huge part?
It is.
Okay.
It is.
Do you want to tell me a little bit
about
that?
Sure. Yeah, that's primarily, it's been an annual thing that we've set up the last couple few years. And we, as the volunteers go out and we collect donations throughout the community from local businesses. And we bring them back here and we make up silent bid sheets. And then we rent the fairgrounds and we have a really nice dinner and invite the public to come in and do like a silent auction or maybe an oral auction on some items. And it's a great way for the community to kind of get together. I've had people want to get applications through that process. And so it's a win-win for us. We get, you know, we raise money for the program to buy uniforms and coats and get training and all kinds of cool stuff like that. And then also I'm able to bring on new search and rescue members. There's a pretty heavy dedication that you have to have for this. We have training and our / meetings once a month. We're all going to get together. We debrief any searches that we've had the previous month. And then we set up a training light. Because a lot of that stuff, if you don't use it, you know, it kind of gets rusty. And then we're on scene and they're like, hey, how do I plug this in and get to walk to that spot? So we do a lot of that kind of training every month. Yeah, I'd just like to give a big shout out to everybody that volunteers for search and rescue, whether you live in Tillamook or not. I mean, we just want to thank you, because without you, we wouldn't be able to accomplish these complicated missions. It really boils down to the boots on the ground and the people in the drones it's not just the local sheriff's offices. You know, we might kind of steer the ship, but it's really the people that are the volunteers that go out and get it done for us.
If you're interested in volunteering for Tillamook County Search and Rescue, a link to the application process can be found on our Facebook page, and you can find that by searching for at Cold Coast Radio on Instagram or Facebook. I'd like to thank the Tillamook County Sheriff's Office for their help while I gathered information for this episode, and also to Tillamook County Search and Rescue Deputy Bill Cloud for agreeing to meet with me for this interview. And finally, I want to thank Carmen's daughters, Michelle and Jennifer, for answering my list of questions and supplying an updated missing persons flyer, which can be found on Cold Coast's Facebook and Instagram accounts. And you can find those by searching for at Cold Coast Radio on Facebook or Instagram. If you have any information regarding the missing persons case of Carmen Quintana, please contact Tillamook County Sheriff's Detective Tyler Schultz at 503-815-3330. My name is Anne, and you've been listening to Cold Coast on 91.9 FM KMUN in Astoria, Oregon, or on 89.5 KTCB in Tillamook. Join me next month on the first Thursday at 9 a.m. for the next episode, where we'll cover another open missing persons case from our community.